This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There is a private investigator out in Los Angeles who said he's seen things inside a house that no one from law enforcement ever mentioned. Things that could change how we understand the death of 15-year-old Celeste Rivas Hernandez, the missing teen, later found dead inside the front trunk of a Tesla linked to the musician known as David. I know, it's an active investigation. It doesn't mean they're going to release everything to the public right now by any means. That's not how any of this works. So I hear your arguments that you're speaking aloud right now. I hear you. But what you're about to learn about what was found in that house that was not taken in as evidence might just blow your mind. And it might make you go, oh, God, really? 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 Are we really missing these? Like, why? How? Let's go through this. And let me know in the comment section what your thoughts are on YouTube. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi if you're not already there. And while you're listening to this, do me a favor and hit that subscribe button. I'd really appreciate that. And then you will appreciate it too, because you'll get all the content right there for you. You'll love it. Please do hit subscribe. For weeks, the story has felt like it's sitting in limbo, caught somewhere between tragedy and cover-up. The official narrative hasn't moved an inch. Celeste found deceased in September. Tesla abandoned in the Hollywood Hills. Search warrant executed at a house tied to David. That's that guy, that right there. D4VD. Cause and manner of death undetermined. And that is where it stopped. Until a private investigator named Steve Fisher decided to go looking for what everyone else might have missed. Now, to be clear, Fisher isn't some armchair internet sleuth trying to go viral. He's a licensed investigator in Los Angeles, someone who's worked multiple missing person cases that spilled into public consciousness, the kind of cases people couldn't stop talking about long after the headlines faded. He's known for showing up when the official story stops making sense. Some people see him as, you know, obsessive. Others may see him as the guy willing to go where police won't, or just sometimes, like maybe in this case, looking around. Hey, these seem to be obvious things that are sitting here. Why did the police miss this? And this is not a battle of police versus private investigators, so let's get that straight. Everything he's finding, he is turning over to the police. It's just, again, one of these cases you're going to find where you go, well, if it wasn't for the private investigator, they wouldn't have this. If they just had looked a little harder. And this time, he didn't come to the case. The case came to him. The landlord of the Hollywood Hills property where David has been staying was furious after police finished their search. No warrant copy left behind. No list of what had been taken. No one returning his calls. He didn't even know whether his house was still considered part of an active investigation. Oh, communication. That's where the police are always great. And with a multi-million dollar home under his name and the word homicide floating around it, that's kind of a nightmare scenario. So he did what anyone with money and unanswered questions does. He hired a private investigator. When Fisher walked into that house, police had already cleared it. The tape was down. The search team was gone. But what he says he saw didn't look like a completed search. He says it looked like a job half finished, allegedly. Drawers unopened, electronics left behind, things that didn't fit the checklist of a thorough warrant execution, allegedly. He says he found a DVR, a hard drive, and several digital devices that were still inside the property. And look, we don't have to sensationalize this to understand how serious this is. You can't send the meter maids out to go do investigations like this, and because that's really kind of what it sounds like. And if your homicide investigation unit or whoever the hell you sent in to do this is missing these things, LAPD, well, then it's time to do better. In a case involving a celebrity, a dead teenager, and a smart car loaded with onboard tech, digital evidence is everything. It can tell you who entered, when,
what devices were paired, even what was deleted. Leaving that kind of material behind isn't a paperwork error. It's a kind of oversight that can wreck a case. And how many times have we seen cases on this program where the answer to the problem is not necessarily who's accused of doing it or those who have suffered the consequences, but who fucks it up 9 times out of 10? Oh, it starts with the word P.
I'm not anti-cop. I am not. But for the love of God, you know there's a spotlight on you. Let's up our game a bit, shall we? I could go on and on. And go on and on the psychology. Why were these things not checked? Why were they not found? Why were they not put into evidence? What's the reasoning? I will say this. Keep this in mind, too. We pay our police shit. So then to expect superhuman or even, I guess, adequate work sometimes. Yes, you signed up for the job. You know what it entails, and you accepted that pay level. So you better just effing do it. Seriously, that's kind of how that works. Don't become a cop if you don't want to do the job. And your version of the job is not the job. There is a version of the job. I guess it's more of a societal look back going, I wonder why it's hard to find good ones. Same with teachers. Wonder why it's hard to find good ones. Because we don't value them. We don't pay them adequately. And when you do that, you don't get the best. You get a lot of people who are the best leaving and going and doing things other places. Is that what's at play here? I don't know, but I'm so sick of seeing cases like this where everything is out there in the open. And it's like, really? You screwed it up that bad. You missed these, and there's multiple of you. How? I don't know. I don't know the answer, but my mind starts racing to try and find answers as to why things aren't done as thoroughly as they should be, especially when a layperson who's not a police officer, who's not an investigator, who's not an attorney can easily look at this shit and go, why didn't you do your job? And there's what he says came next, and it's the detail that's caught everyone's attention. Fisher claims that among the items left in the house were written notes, documents that detailed, in his words, what to do about Celeste. Kind of a big deal. He called them dark, deliberate, and disturbing, sadistic even. He hasn't said who wrote them or how he can prove authorship. He's careful not to cross that legal line, but he says they were in the home left untouched after the official search. If that is true, again, we are taking his word from it from what he said in interviews. It means the most potentially damning evidence in this case wasn't found by police. It was found by the landlord's private investigator weeks later. And the chain of custody, well, it's broken now, which means that even in and if those notes are real, they may never see a courtroom. Still, the existence of something like that, something describing a plan involving Celeste in any way, shape, or form, considering her remains were found in a trunk? Kind of big. Changes the story. Because it suggests premeditation, it suggests intent, and it raises the question, what else did they miss? And when you don't have any answers yet, and we're more than a month in, coming up on 2 months, makes you start to lose faith. So when Fisher started building a timeline, he turned his focus to the Tesla, the car that became Celeste's final resting place. Through camera footage and neighborhood canvassing, he says he was able to map out exactly when the car appeared on the street. It was later towed. Now, that's not to say that the investigators haven't already done that, too, and they're just not releasing that, but he's done it, too. He says there's a video of it being parked, clear enough to see who did it. He won't name the person publicly, but his comments imply the obvious. The person who parked the car is the same person. It isn't the same person. Nobody knows who owns it. And we know who owns it, but we don't know who parked the car. That is a very big detail about all of this, because number one, David wasn't around, allegedly, you know, when they found this body. He was on tour somewhere else. This body had been in this car for a long time. So timeline is important here. And we don't know who parked that car. We don't know who wrote those notes. David is an innocent man until proven otherwise. He maintains his innocence and no charges have been filed. And that's important. It's so easy to jump to conclusions in a case like this just because you have a big name involved in a case. When you have an entity like that, a person, that's what it becomes, more of an entity. A lot of people, a business, if you will. So, again, I want to be very careful on that in terms of assigning blame, because it could be him just as easy as it could be the buddy of one of his crew that he didn't even know who existed. I mean, I'm just making that one up. But that's, it's someone in this circle somewhere, whether he knows the person or not, or is the person or not, we do not know the answer to that yet. So we have to take a look at the evidence as it's coming in. And according to Fisher, you can see in the footage the care with which the car is parked, the deliberate pace, the frunk being closed, the quick walk away. It's not conclusive proof of guilt, but it's suggested. It's intent written in body language. He also points to the car's inactivity. He says the Tesla hadn't been used since January. And by February 1st, the new red Tesla was leased by David's team, effectively replacing the old one. The last verified photo of Celeste alive, January 2nd. That coincidence, a car, retired, and a girl vanishing in the same week, it's kind of hard to ignore. If that timeline is right, Celeste could have been dead for 8 months before her body was ever discovered, and that makes the condition of her remains, described by law enforcement as severely decomposed, makes a lot more sense. So what does that tell us? It tells us she likely died a while back. It tells us the car wasn't just a place she ended up. It may have been a place she was moved to after the fact, very likely. And it tells us that whatever happened to her didn't happen in that car. Raises the next major question. Where did it happen? What happened? According to Fisher, it wasn't in that Hollywood Hills house. He says the photos and videos of Celeste in her final weeks don't match that property. Different furniture, different lighting, different layout. He believes she was staying somewhere else. That's a big deal, because it would mean police executed a full search on the wrong location. Wrong location, right location. I don't really think it's the wrong location. You're going to look anywhere you're going to look. But it might not have been the location of the crime, but he found other pieces of evidence there, allegedly, that were tying to this. And if they did search there, again, it's not because they were incompetent. It's because in this case, information seems to have been compartmentalized in different places. People close to the artists handling the leases, the cars, the travel, the access, layers between what's owned, what's used, and who's actually living there or using it are several people deep. If Celeste was being moved around, even just socially or temporarily, like Weekend at Bernie's in hell, the paper trail gets messy fast, and that's exactly the kind of mess predators hide behind. Instability, buried addresses, people who come and go, it's a perfect setup for confusion. But that confusion is also how cases like this die on the vine. Meanwhile, the official side of the story has not changed. The LAPD says they've conducted multiple searches, they're working with a medical examiner, and no suspect has been named because cause and manner of death are still pending. They said the autopsy report is incomplete. The DA's office has confirmed that no case has been submitted for review as of this recording. In other words, the system is in park. And while the police wait on toxicology, a private investigator is out there saying he's already uncovered a potential plan, established a working timeline, and determined where Celeste likely wasn't when she died. the contrast going to be sharper. Now, let's be fair. Fisher's claims still have to be vetted. He has turned everything over to law enforcement. Good. It's not a battle. Like I said, they'll need to test it, cross-reference it, and build it into a case that holds up in court. But whether or not his findings are admissible, that's another thing. They've exposed something deeper. The perception that official investigations move slower when celebrity is involved. Yeah. Because here's the hard truth. If this wasn't a rising pop artist, if this was just an ordinary citizen, there'd be a mugshot by now. There'd be a timeline, a press conference, a person of interest. Instead, the story's frozen in time. You know, we think all of those things would be happening. But they're not. And it's not because he's a celebrity or not a celebrity. It just appears to be how they're working. And people are starting to lose trust. When weeks turn into months and nothing happens, while a teenager girl's body was literally rotting in a car that anyone could have walked past. Think about that. A Tesla parked in a residential neighborhood for weeks. Neighbors complained it got ticketed, it got towed, and no one knew that 15-year-old girl was inside. Fisher's right about how long that car sat. That's not just a crime scene. That's a public failure. Here's another layer. The house had cameras, a sophisticated surveillance setup. According to Fisher, door sensors, smoke detectors with built-in cameras. He says many were covered, some disabled. Again, not an accident. That's someone making sure no one could watch what was happening inside. Or it could really simply be, you know, things not being maintained. Typically, when you're renting a house versus owning a house, there's sometimes less care that goes into it, unfortunately, for a lot of people. So we have a story built on layers of what appears to be some sort of concealment, literal and figurative. A dead girl hidden in the car, questionable cameras, allegedly evidence that may have been overlooked, and a private investigator who may have uncovered more on his own than an entire department did with a warrant. So let's pull back, because this case, as bizarre and specific as it is, isn't unique. It is part of a pattern. We've seen it before. High-profile suspects, slow-moving cases, the delicate dance between fame and accountability. When justice collides with celebrity, the brakes come on. Lawyers get involved early. PR teams advise silence. And suddenly, what should be an investigation becomes an image management campaign. Meanwhile, Celeste is dead. Her family is left with nothing but silence and speculation. And the one person still talking, the private eye, gets treated like a shadow. But say what you will about him, he's asking the right questions. Who parked the car? When did she die? And why was a Tesla replaced? What's in those writings? And why hasn't any of that made its way into an official statement yet? They're not wild conspiracy questions. They're procedural ones. They're the same things that any detective worth their badge would be asking. So why aren't we hearing them from the LAPD? Maybe because they're still verifying. Maybe because they're building a careful case. Maybe. Sure. Or maybe, and this is what gnaws at people, maybe. Maybe there's something else going on. I don't know. Because if the truth is that evidence was missed or worse, dismissed, that's not just embarrassment, that's liability. Maybe the truth is a little inconvenient. We see this in a lot of cases early on where things are bumbled. And then to cover for that bumble, you get bumblefuckery that goes on. These are very important terms that you should know about. Bumble and bumblefuckery. They are official legal terms. And you get bumble clusterfuckery above that when people are trying to cover for the bumblefuck that's covering for the bumble. You see it in cases all the time. Again, official terms. You have to use those when you're talking about this. When embarrassment meets liability, investigations tend to slow to a crawl. I'm not saying that's what's going on here, but I don't know. The longer it takes, the colder the trail gets. Witnesses disappear, memories fade, digital evidence gets overwritten, and the only thing left standing is perception. That law enforcement doesn't care, or worse, that they're protecting someone. Maybe that's unfair, but perception has power. It shapes how people trust their institutions, how they believe in justice, and how families grieve. And that's what makes this story sting. Celeste Rivas Hernandez isn't just a victim. She's a symbol of how easily young girls fall through the cracks of fame, influence, and bureaucracy. A child who grew up in the shadow of online obsession, who met someone older and powerful and somehow ended up in a Tesla, discarded like an afterthought. A teenager who should have been protected but wasn't. And if the only person fighting for her now is a private investigator, if he's the one uncovering what the system missed, then maybe we need to start asking why that's become normal. Because this isn't just one girl's story. It's a mirror. It's a reflection of how many times we've seen this before. A young victim, an older, more powerful man, slow motion investigation, public confused and angry, and a family begging for answers while lawyers spin statements about ongoing inquiries. It's the same movie, just with a new cast. And somewhere in a police locker, there's a hard drive or a stack of papers and might tell us exactly what happened. The question is whether anyone will have the courage to open it or whether this case will just drift into the same gray fog of unsolved that swallows too many stories like this. Because make no mistake, if the PI's findings are real, someone knows the truth. Someone knows when Celeste died. Someone knows where. Someone knows who helped move that body. And until they're forced to speak, the person who seems to be carrying this case forward isn't a cop or a prosecutor or a politician. It's a PI who's refusing to shut up. That should bother everyone, because justice shouldn't depend on who's loudest. It should depend on who's right. And if the only person willing to say out loud that something doesn't add up is an outsider with a flashlight and a file folder, then maybe the system isn't broken. Maybe it's working exactly the way it was built to. Slow, careful, comfortable with delay, until everyone stops asking questions. Not here. Not this time. Because 15-year-old Celeste Rivas Hernandez deserves more than silence. And if it takes a private investigator to drag the truth into daylight, then let him drag. Because something in that house, in that car, in that timeline doesn't make sense. And someone out there knows exactly why. So much confusion here. Give me your thoughts in the comments. I am no closer to having any clue who has anything to do with this than you are. I know it's not our job to do that. But when you find out that there was allegedly some solid pieces of evidence completely overlooked in a place that they already looked, well, what else are we missing? I guess that's the big question. Give me your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube, if that's where you are. And be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage of this and the many cases we're watching right here. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.